Hello and welcome to KCRPI. I'm your host, Rochelle Gardner-Rowe. We're now four episodes in, but for any newcomers, in the first season, KCRPI is focusing on a project called Feminiz, where we'll be exploring historical and contemporary feminism in the Kansas City art scene. Things started up during Women's History Month, but now that March is over, well, we're not stopping. In fact, the Feminiz interviews are leading up to an exhibition of portraits of the folks I've been talking to, so I hope you'll come out on July's first Friday to Counterpoint in the Crossroads Arts District of Kansas City. More on that in the coming months, but for right now, I have the honor of sharing with you an interview with Elizabeth Kirsch. She is an art historian, curator, and writer who has curated over 100 exhibitions of contemporary art, American Indian art, and photography, both locally and across the country. She writes frequently for national and local arts publications, including our very own, the bi-monthly KC Studio magazine. So we talked about the Kansas City art scene of the 1970s, including the challenges and limitations placed on women artists, and how her early encounters with the feminist art movement influenced her career. If being a guerrilla girl, even for a day before you die, is on your bucket list, this lady is for you. I'll be back with Elizabeth after the break. The KCRPI podcast is supported by an inspiration grant from the Arts KC Regional Arts Council, whose mission is to unleash the power of the arts. Whether you're an artist, company, or community member, check out artskc.org to see how you can join them in their vision to build a city of great dreams and vigorous life where everyone participates in and benefits from the arts. Now, back to the episode. Hello, everyone. I'm here with Elizabeth Kirsch. So, Elizabeth, welcome to KCRPI, and thank you for participating in the Feminiz Project.
You're so welcome.
Well, why don't we start out by giving us a sense of where you were in the Kansas City art scene in the 1970s?
I had moved to Kansas City from San Francisco in 1974 and entered graduate school in art history. And my goal then, it was impossible to get a degree in contemporary art anywhere in the United States back then. So I was working on a degree in 18th century French art. I was asked to be the gallery assistant to the first art gallery at UMKC, and it was developed by Hollister Sturgis, who was my advisor. And so that was my first exposure, actually, to contemporary art. And one of the first shows he did was of a woman, Deborah Remington. And it was really exciting for me. I was not familiar with contemporary art, particularly this kind of art. And I think you could definitely say Remington's work was of a feminist nature. And then when the Women's Caucus developed, that was because the head of the art department, Leanne Miller, was very much a vocal feminist and an artist, and her art itself was very feminist in nature. And she got a lot of women excited to be part of the Women's Caucus, and I just started going to meetings. Now, I wasn't an artist. I was an art historian and subsequently a curator. But that's one reason I wanted to become a curator after that, was because I loved working with living artists and I loved contemporary art. And when Mimi Shapiro came to town to jury this show, I knew then she was a big deal.
And I should say the show that we're referencing is the Women 77 exhibit, which was sponsored by the regional chapter of Kansas City for the Women's Caucus for the Arts. This was the first exhibition that the Women's Caucus for the Arts had sponsored, and this was actually the first regional chapter was here in Kansas City.
So I was the gallery assistant, and I was working with Mimi, and basically I was receiving the art and opening it and carrying it into the gallery, and it was really an incredible experience. I didn't know who any of these women were. I didn't know who the artists were, and to see this much wonderful art, that it was really, for me, a radical experience as an art historian, and then I actually was encouraged after that to change. I did change to contemporary art, even though there was no classes. I had basically self-taught, and I started writing about it because there weren't that many people in town then writing. And a lot of those women, their issues weren't, it wasn't feminist symbolism as much, although some certainly like Leanne Miller did, but it might have been kinds of content that would be associated more with the female, whether it has to do with a domestic or, you know, landscapes, floral paint, whatever. And then beyond that, these were women who were not being shown anywhere. They couldn't get gallery shows. Museum was not buying work by women. And so they were very excited just to be in a show. And it was very controversial even then. It's like, why do women need their own space? Why do women have to have their own shows? Women and, you know, male and female artists aren't any different. And that was certainly a big argument. And some women artists agreed with that. But the reality was, maybe they weren't different in terms of actual quality of their art, but it certainly was different as to the availability of venues for them to, for their art to be seen. And it was a shock for me when I moved to New York in the 80s. I love the Gorilla Girls. My secret wish before I die is that I get to be a Gorilla Girl for the last day of my life and wear a mask. The Gorilla Girls were picketing the top gallery in New York at that time, which was Pace, because Pace was not showing a single female artist. They represented the estate of Louise Nevelson. But in New York, women weren't being shown. Women's art was not being shown. And the art that started being shown first was art that was overtly feminist in manner. But that left out a whole lot of other women artists. And obviously, that's changed somewhat, but to this day, if you look at auction records, say, of women, the sales prices for men's art is much higher than that for women's art. I mean, it's still a battle. So I think that I can still feel that excitement in 1977 because the energy, it's like, yes, I get to be seen, I get to be heard, I get to have someone like Mimi Shapiro paying attention. And as I said, it was totally empowering for me as a young thing to be aware of that.
I'm sure it was also really exciting to have such a national figure like Miriam Shapiro, who, if our audience isn't familiar with, she's sort of one of the premier feminist artists of the 1970s, sort of up there with Judy Chicago in terms of putting feminist artwork out on the national scene. So to have someone from that scene all the way out here in the Midwest was kind of a big deal.
Well, yeah, and that was another lesson, because she was tough. She was not a nurturing type. It was like, we're going to get this done, move that art in there. And as my advisor said to me at that time, Elizabeth, it's not enough to be a nice person. I mean, you have to do the work. And I think it was a battle, and she really came across kind of like a warrior, no nonsense. And I just did whatever she told me to do, I did.
Well, I also believe that, quite frankly, she had a lot of work to do. I think there were over 800 submissions, yes. Far more interest in the exhibition than was anticipated, and she had to narrow it down to less than, I believe, 150 pieces.
I had never seen so much art in one place in my life, other than in a museum. And so, yeah, it was a lot of work. I just remember, as one of the official schleppers, I schlepped a lot. And I also loved watching the whole vetting process. And subsequently, I've had to jury shows myself. And so I think watching, you know, Mimi take it as seriously as she did and as no nonsense, that was instructional as well.
What was your sense of sort of the lasting impact, or at least maybe for a few years after the show? Were there more exhibitions focused on women's work, women's art after that, or did it seem to sort of just go back to the norm?
Well, for me, it was disappointing that the local galleries did not show women's art. The only gallery, and I ended up working for him, Douglas Drake, the only gallerist who showed women artists was the only male gallerist in town. And I think what it just did was just open my eyes. And once again, I'm not speaking as an artist. I'm speaking as a contemporary art writer and curator. And that was about the same time that you realized that Janssen's History of Art, which, you know, I snoozed my way through that thing, which was supposed to be the entire history of art, right? It didn't have the work of a single female in it or a single person of color. So just, I think, calling attention to some of these huge gaping holes in the world of contemporary art, because contemporary art was supposed to be so liberal, so open, so, well, you know, it was just as sexist, if not more so, than anything else out there. And I think Kansas City was amazingly advanced, considering that it was in the middle of the country, but we were on a par with things that were happening in New York. I mean, women were still having to fight to get into galleries. Their prices still were low. Trying to get museum people to even come to your studio, whether you were a male artist, was hard enough, but if you were a female, forget about it. And so it's just taken a lot of time to change. And I know for a number of women artists, if they rock the boat too much saying they're a feminist artist in this town, their sales would be zip. And a lot of women just didn't even want to talk about that, because being that political here would have been a death sentence for them in terms of sales. So I'm not sure how some of the women artists finagled it. Certainly the Art Institute was awful as well. They had one female teacher, and there was incredible sexual abuse from the professors there and at UMKC. Same thing at UMKC. And I can speak from personal experience. So those times have changed, I hope, at both places. The same issues were there in the art world as well. If you want to get in a gallery, do you have to sleep with the guy? I mean, it was just, once I became aware of what was actually going on, it was sickening. So it's just been, I think, little by little. And it's, you know, to force art reviewers to go and write about women's shows, to just, it's still a battle, I know. You know, they say 80% of artists with MFAs end up quitting art and doing art, and because it's so hard. And I wonder how many of those are women. I really do, because it's a tough go no matter what, but if you've got things stacked against you at the same time, if you're invisible, then I don't know, it's hard to even imagine. So I just have to do my part as a writer, a curator, to make sure that people are getting seen who I think should be seen.
So rewinding a bit to before the Women's 77 exhibition, around the forming of the regional chapter of the Women's Caucus, what did you sense in the buildup? How did that come about?
Well, I remember going to the meetings. As I said, I think I was the only art historian, and I think I was tolerated more than anything else because I didn't make art. I barely knew what contemporary art was, but I went because it was so interesting, and it's like they didn't bring cookies or lemonade to the meetings. They were working. They were making lists. They were calling. They were, you know, really a faction, and they were all very serious about what they were doing and getting organized and pulling it off, and was a huge thing to pull off.
What did you see them do? Like, what were they making lists of? What were they calling about?
Well, I think, obviously, that's before the internet. So back then, you picked up the phone, you called people, you went door to door. I mean, you did things the old-fashioned way. And obviously, to have 800 entries, people worked to make sure everyone heard. And I think it spread like wildfire, but still people had to really organize. And the meetings could be very crowded. But they were organized, and I thought it was interesting because these were not hen parties. People were very respectful. I mean, I took it for granted they would be, but it may surprise people how respectful and how down-to-earth and how organized people were and getting things done. It wasn't a coffee klatch.
Do you remember the opening of the exhibition?
It was packed. I mean, I had to go, I think I had to go to the tunnels and bring back huge 50-pound wedges of cheese, because that's where UMKC got stuff. And so I was still the schlepper. It just was so crowded. It's just, and I was just trying to make sure to pick up empty cups. I mean, that was my role back then. But wow, it's like I said, it was just very energized. And it was fun, but there was something beyond fun. I mean, I've been to plenty of gallery openings where people are like having a party. And yeah, this was a party, but it was more than that too. It was more serious than that. There was some incredible pride at what had happened and what was up on the walls. That part was a little different.
And sort of moving on, over the years of reviewing exhibitions, and you've reviewed many as well as curated them, what are a few exhibitions by women artists that have stuck with you in particular? And that's, I mean, this whether the work was overtly feminist or not.
Well, one of my all-time favorite artists is Linda Lytton. She's a ceramic artist. She is, and blatantly, a feminist artist. And her work is feminist sometimes and sometimes not. But her work, I think, is amazing. And plus, she's won. I mean, now in the last couple of years, she's gotten every award under the sun. But when I first came back here, she couldn't get a gallery. And besides the fact that she's a great porcelain maker, and she's got a skill set that's one of the best in the world for porcelain and glazing, her subject matter is still overtly feminine. And that's one reason she couldn't get a show for a very long time. She ended up having lots of shows abroad, through China, Europe, Middle East, you name it. But Kansas City, it was still hard for her. And so a few years ago, I wrote a review, and I just blasted the city for ignoring her. And, you know, she's just, I think what amazes me about Linda is that she just doesn't give up. She just wouldn't give up. She wouldn't change her subject matter. She's still political. She's done a series now on guns. And, you know, she's a political artist using these exquisite sort of feminine kinds of materials. And, oh, I just think she's amazing and her art is amazing. And now she's having shows in New York and good. But, man, she's had to hang in there for decades to get to that place.
And for our audience, don't worry if this sounds exciting. We'll be speaking with Linda Lytton later in an upcoming podcast. Any other women artists you'd like to share?
Well, this is an artist that was shown at the Douglas Drake Gallery, and her name is Vivian Torrance. Now, at that time, Vivian was in Des Moines and was teaching, and she makes really tiny collages. And she would go through 19th century artist books, cut things out, put them together, and watercolor and color them. And they're like these delicate, little, sensitive, poetic things. And I also put Vivian in a show a couple of years ago, and in it, she's not going to tell you what these are about. She doesn't like to do that. But I poked at her, and there was one where you see several women, and one is like from a Persian collage, the other is from a pop art, and put them together, and there are whole little narratives about women and men. And so her art, I would call it feminist in this sense that she's dealing. She really honors the female. She honors the feminine, and she acknowledges some of the disadvantages of being female in a Western world in a very gentle way. And I mean, I think people think of feminist art as being very angry, but it can be anything and everything. So those are my, you know, I've loved the art that these women have done for years and years, and I still do. Those are two that stick out.
The art scene for women in Kansas City is certainly better today than it has been. But where is there any areas that you think it's still lacking or still problematic in terms of women in the arts in Kansas City?
Well, I think it's the same old problem getting gallery shows. And I noticed recently the Nelson had a show of a folk art collection by a woman collector, a very wealthy woman. And I walked through the show, went three times, because there's something wrong with that. I sat down, and there was an older woman, older than me, actually, sitting there. And I said, she said, you see something wrong with the show? And I said, yeah, there's something wrong with the show, but I don't know what it is. She said, how about because I don't have a single textile in here or a single work by a woman? And in folk art, there were quilts, there were textiles, there are all sorts of things, and there's not a single work by a woman. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, I didn't get to review that show, or I would have mentioned that factor. And the review was just wonderful. You know, it's like, I wouldn't have put that show in the museum. But I don't know if people even notice these things. I always tell people, you know, if I talked about writing about art or if I get in arguments with people, it's like, pay attention to what isn't here. What isn't being said? What isn't being shown? Who isn't here? When we start doing that.
I think that's definitely a great point to make in that, well, you only know what you know. Mm-hmm. And once I really began to sort of dive into feminism as a method of thinking or an outlook on the world, I did start noticing things that weren't there. Mm-hmm. I started noticing how people use their words a bit more, and taking, there are things that I just absolutely used to take for granted. Right. And I think it's a perspective that's relevant.
And it may not be comfortable. It's not comfortable. Change isn't comfortable. But I think I will always remember those women from 77. And what I have to call now is a sense of pride that they were being seen and they were being heard. And we know now that is something every human being needs. And for that woman in the Nelson who had to have been close to 90 to notice what wasn't there and to be upset enough to talk to me, a total stranger, that tells you it matters. It really matters. And I think it's everybody's job to pay attention to that.
Well, Elizabeth Kirsch, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Did you enjoy today's slice? You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, or like Casey Arpai on Facebook and follow it on Twitter. Just search for Casey Arpai. You can also support this podcast by visiting patreon.com/KCArpie. For the price of a cup of coffee or a slice of pie, you can help KCArpie serve up tasty episodes into the future. Until we nosh again, I'm Rochelle Gardner-Rowe, and thank you for listening.